Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to the Future Neighbor Podcast. I am Daniel.
And I'm Katie.
Katie, we should start this episode because we had a fabulous weekend. And I wanted to talk. Let's break people into the wonderful world of Yangyang.
Indeed.
Yeah, Yangyang is like a surfer's town out on the eastern coastline of Korea. So Seoul is out on the west.
Yeah.
Well, it's not on the coastline, but it's very close to the western coast of Korea. And there, most of the shoreline is mudflats.
Mm.
You can't really go swimming or no surf. But then on the east coast, I was surprised. This was the first time we actually made a trip out there.
Yeah, the east coast is funny because it's very mountainous, but yeah. It's also very cliffy.
That's right. Right near Yangyang Beach, there's the Seoraksan, which I think is the second largest mountain. Number one is Mount Hallasan.
It's like the backbone of Korea. And then we have like the east that's supposed to have very strong waves coming from the Pacific Ocean. Why are you
huge
laughing?
Huge waves in my mind. Guys, it took like about 4 hours and a half from where we live, which is a little bit south of Seoul. And we got stuck in traffic.
Yeah, it was a Saturday and we left house pretty like lazy, 11-ish, 10.
I wanted to sign up a surf lesson and take Katie out on the waters. And when we got onto the beach line, we looked at the waves. Nothing. Everyone's just out on the tubes, on the boards. It looks like they were suntanning underneath the ocean. I mean, it was so serene. There was no waves.
Yeah.
So it didn't work out, but the trip there was fun, no? Felt like a road trip.
Yeah, it did. I mean, usually if there's no traffic, it would just take 2 hours and a half. But
that's how much it took coming back at night.
You would just go all the way in highway.
Yeah.
But then this time, because there was so much traffic in highway, the navigator kind of led us to go through the normal roads and then highway and then normal roads.
Yeah.
And on the way, we had some char oksusu.
Yeah, char oksusu is what? It's the Korean-style corn.
Yeah. And I think Gangneung is like famous for it because we saw so many of those on the street.
It was interesting that the GPS, tried to take us the fastest route, but we ended up going into different cities instead of just staying on the interstate. But then that's when we got to get that corn, which really made it feel like a road trip.
And so many cornfields.
I know. I didn't even know that Korea or that area was famous for corn, or that Korea even like grew its corn. I thought a lot of it was imported. Korean corn is, there's this type, like if you are Korean and you shopped at Korean market, you might see some of the, like a food corner that are steaming corn in these like plastic bags, and they'll have steam, right? Like steam bubbles on the inside.
Yeah.
But it's not sweet. It's not like American corn that's like very very sweet with like butter on the outside.
It kind of feels like you're chewing rice.
Yeah, it's a little bit chewy.
Yeah.
And that chewing texture is what Koreans really like about that char oksusu.
Mm.
If you're at the Korean market next time, try to ask the ladies if they have char oksusu. It's a pretty good. I think for the initial 2 hours and a half, we listened to like all of our music, fighting for control over the music. We went through a lot of hip hop. Then Katie went through her pop songs. It reminds me of like when I was living in the States and we would go towards Las Vegas. There's like usually two stops that me and my buddies would take.
Yeah.
One is either this Greek Euro, where you go for these like Greek
yogurt.
No, like the gyro or some people call them Euro. I don't know what the right pronunciation is, but the sandwiches, like lamb kebab sandwiches. Oh, there's a famous place. I think it's called the Mad Greeker or Mad Greek shop or something like that. And then there's another place. There's like this place where they sell like alien jerky. Like,
what?
It's like beef jerky, but it's branded with aliens.
Oh. And
once you stop there, you know you're like, I don't know, X hours away. So you feel like, it feels like progress.
Oh.
So next time we go again to Yangyang,
yeah.
As soon as we like see corn, we know we'll be halfway there.
Yeah, yeah,
so
totally.
It's a good like mental note. And remember when we were driving to the beach, we got this like random like SOS emergency like alert from our car.
Yeah, that was so strange. Somebody just Like it just popped up on our GPS. Yeah. Somebody's calling you and we picked it up and he's like, oh, and it already said which lateral and longitude we are at.
Yeah, like the alert message showed our exact geolocation by longitude and latitude.
Yeah.
And then we're just listening to music and we're just like, you know, we're just in the, you know, in our mood and just driving, just cruising, and all of a sudden, 안녕하세요, something, 잘 있으십니까?
Yeah, how is your drive going? Yeah. Is anything, like, is everything okay?
Yeah, they didn't contact us through phone. It wasn't like through Bluetooth. They called our car.
Yeah,
which I didn't know that they could even contact, make contact with our car. And it started to talk with us, and it was another person. Yeah, and we were so confused, right?
Yeah. And they actually called us several times. And then the first time, we were just so stunned with what was going on.
Yeah, it's like Big Brother.
Yeah, we were like, yes, everything is fine. We didn't even ask who they were. We were like, yes, we're doing fine. And then, yeah, enjoy your trip. And they hung up. And then we were like, what just happened?
I was like, did we get like a call from a hacker? How is this car talking to us?
Yeah, that was really scary. Because somebody is like, following us, right? Tracking us.
If somebody can talk to us via our car. And again, it wasn't our phone because we checked our phone. There was no phone calls.
Yeah. And then they called us a second time. We were like, we were determined to ask, track down this guy, right?
Yeah. So second time, another like a message came up and we clicked answer. And they're like, hey, how is the drive coming along? You guys are doing all right? And we're like, where are you calling from? Like, who is this? And they're like, oh, this is Hyundai Blue Hands. The heck is Blue Hands? Who are you?
Yeah.
And basically they answered that it's a concierge service for new cars. That if you buy Hyundai in Korea for 5 years, like you can set up an alarm or alert so that if you're driving for an extended period of time, this operator will call you to make sure that you're not dozing off in your car while you're sleeping. Yeah. It keeps you company. Mm-hmm. I didn't know we were signed up for it.
Yeah, none of us knew. And it's something that you can also turn it off manually, but we had no idea.
Yeah, and that's why the reason it comes up now is because that was our first long-term drive.
Yeah.
It took us 4.5 hours, and we went straight without any stopping. Yeah.
And I think they called us in total like 3 times.
4 times.
Really?
When we stopped, when we were at the beach, they called again. And by the time I was like, we're good.
Over. Like, we know who you are now.
Yeah. Click over. Click.
I mean, it's really nice, but at the same time, it's kind of scary.
We had like a 30-minute debate about like, oh my gosh, where is our data going? We have no idea. Could you imagine if like in the future and kind of like... what is that Netflix episode that talks about all the crazy things that could happen? Ah, I forgot the name. Black Mirror. What if like the government, you like forget to pay your credit card bills and then your car comes to a halt saying that you have mispaid bills. You are not able to. That's how smart the cars become. Yeah, it's happening. A lot of stuff are happening behind the scenes that pretty amazing.
And then the good usage of this case that they were saying is like when you're in a very severe car accident and like you can't even reach your phone, then you can just press that SOS button and then they can come like help you out immediately.
I see.
That's like the best case scenario.
Yeah. You know, along this dot, or I was listening to this podcast talking about using AI for facial recognition and the problems with that. Right? Like, I think Microsoft and a few of the other large tech companies, they decided not to sell their facial recognition technology to police stations.
Oh.
And they were explaining why is because, so right now, especially in America, like there is a lot of racial injustice and a lot of black and brown people are locked up, right?
Yeah.
So when you train an algorithm like an AI to recognize your face, you have to train it, right? You've done a little bit of practice of AI.
Yeah, yeah.
Machine learning, right? So in order to machine learn, you have to give it data.
Yeah.
And then it'll start matching, and then its recognition can get better. But
data is already biased.
Exactly. It's already pre-biased. So if the justice system right now is already like sees a black person, like 80%, I'm just making up the numbers, but 80% it will say this person is a criminal or could be a criminal.
Mm.
So then if you take the human out of the recognition process, can you imagine how much harm it could do?
Yeah.
Instead of good. I mean, perhaps like in the like justice system, you're able to nail 20 criminals more efficiently with less resources.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a system where if you do, person who hasn't done anything goes to jail, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge loss when someone who's innocent goes to jail, right? So let's say you have a, miscalculation of 1%. Right? We're 99% accurate, right? Well, that 1%, if you times it by a million, becomes tens and hundreds of thousands of people who are wrongly convicted.
Yeah, right? And it's people's lives.
It's people's lives on the line. So it has to be nearly 99.9999999%, at which you know technology is not able to deliver. So then people are just like, you know what? Then just remove it.
Yeah.
No need to use it.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah,
that they decided not to do that.
Yeah, it just crossed my mind. There's so much technologies that are evolving so fast right now that, you know, if we don't pay attention towards it, it could be, you know, going the wrong way.
Yeah, even for me, I feel so overwhelmed with all the new learnings I have to do every day as a web developer.
Yeah.
There's always like new frameworks coming out, new libraries, new techniques.
You know, earlier we were talking about that our phone listens to us, right?
Yeah.
It's true that our phone listens to us, right? No, because it's not a joke. Like, it really, if you talk about something, you'll see an ad for it.
Oh my gosh.
No, it really happens.
That's really, I mean, it's, you know, one of the things that you kind of know at the back of your mind, but don't want to like admit it.
Yeah. We should run
too scary.
We should run a little test. What's something very random that Google would never expect us to search? And let's see if we see any ads for it. And we'll report next week.
Something really random. What about spaceship?
No, but there would be no ads for spaceship.
But there's an area. Oh, what about like property? What about pension?
Sheep.
What is a sport that we both don't have interest in and don't even play?
Cricket. Yeah, like the sport cricket.
Okay,
I have zero
idea
on how to play it. I know it's popular, but I could safely say, have you ever searched cricket before, Kitty?
No.
I haven't either. So if we start seeing ads for cricket paddles or bats.
So it's on.
It's on.
From this moment.
Yeah. And we'll keep saying cricket. Cricket. Cricket
sounds like that insect, isn't it?
Yeah, there's that cricket too. So either if you see like
oh my god,
if you see like pesticides for cricket, or if you see or if you see some people doing a sport, Katie, you screenshot that and we'll report next week to see if that actually comes up.
Oh my gosh, it's like the moment come true.
So did you like Yangyang, the beach town? And
yeah, I love how like local it is. It's like a small village.
Yeah.
And like it felt kind of like a countryside dish, you know. All the buildings were like really low ceiling, and
yeah, there was no skyscrapers. Like in Busan, it's next to the ocean, but it feels very modernized. There's huge apartments everywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas Yangyang felt like a surfer town.
Yeah, it felt really like cozy and yeah, natural.
Mm.
So I was really surprised how many people there were, how all these people knew of all these places.
I think a lot of people are traveling domestically now since, well, already in the news, like Jeju is already like experiencing a huge domestic boom in traveling since Koreans can't travel abroad at the moment. So,
but not only Jeju, like all the corners, different corners of Korea are now like welcoming all the domestic tourists.
Yeah. What we ended up doing is just jumping into the ocean for a little bit. My American spirit, I just go into the water quickly, take off my shirt, and I'm into the water in like 20 seconds. But like guys and men in Korea are very hesitant to go into the ocean without a shirt.
Yeah, because you are kind of an eye pollution if you're not well equipped, Daniel.
I mean, it seems like the default, if you want to go into the ocean in Korea as a guy,
you need to have a 6-pack.
Yeah, you need to have an 8-pack, or a 10-pack. You need to already be there. But, you know, I just went in with my halfway dad belly and, you know, just enjoy it. And the funny thing is, once one person does that, it changes the whole environment.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Within like an hour, you saw like at least 7 or 8 guys were like, hey, if that guy's doing it, hey, I forget about it. Like all the dads are in the water without their shirts. I thought that was hilarious.
You gave a lot of encouragement.
Yeah, to live freely. Oh, man.
Yeah, but it was so refreshing. And like the water was so clean.
Mm.
And actually, I like it that there wasn't so much big waves because we could just float on the water and chill. Yeah, it was really nice. And the air was so clear.
Yeah, I think, remember what area was that we passed by that was saying that there's no micro dust?
Daegwalyeong? Yeah, because like we had to go through so many tunnels because we are going through at one point like mountains.
Yeah.
And then there was a sign that you are entering a very clean air area. So breathe in as much as you want.
Yeah, so there's one thing that people rarely talk about. Like, you know, for all these like tourism and you see like a lot of people who see the culture and the fun like media side that makes Korea look very appealing. But for people living in Korea, one of the main reasons why a lot of people want to leave Korea or like live abroad is the air quality. When I first got here, it wasn't that big of an issue like 10 years ago.
No.
But then somewhere like 5 or 6 years ago, the air quality, we call it in Korea this micro dust.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's called yellow dust. There's a lot of conflicting reports and I haven't took the time to see what is right and what is kind of like half fake news and half real. But what I know is that especially during the wintertime, there's a lot of coal plants that get fired up from China.
Yeah.
And then all of that like smog and all of that debris gets carried into the clouds and it just sits in Korea. Especially during the winter times, there's no wind to move that clouds out.
Yeah, yeah, so especially the west side of Korea are...
Where Seoul is.
Yeah, suffer a lot from that microdosed pollution.
Yeah.
And then the east side relatively less.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Japan is very clear.
Yeah, they don't get it. I think 3 or 4 years ago, it was starting to get bad. So like in an app, you'll see air pollution is very bad today. And that's when actually Korea really started to put on masks, you know?
Yeah, even because, before COVID.
Yeah,
right?
Way before COVID, because of this microdust issue, it's like unsolvable for Korea. It's not like China would listen to us. Nor is it 100% China's fault. I think there's also like domestic production of small...
Yeah, which the government is like making changes to like make people drive less cars. And like, you know, we get like those messages from the government saying on these days, numbers ending in this, please don't drive.
Yeah.
And yeah, people are doing various measures to ease it, but definitely doesn't really do much.
So that's why we were thinking, we're like, you know what, in Korea, would there be like opportunity or demand for like oxygen bars? You know, like you make like little, you know, there's a bunch of cafes, but you just line it up with pure oxygen and people can do oxygen therapy.
Is it safe? I don't think you can just drink pure oxygen, right?
No, it has to be mixed, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely would need some person with chemistry expertise. You can't just Google and put that up in a few days. Do like a lean startup stuff. Kill everybody with the wrong mixture of oxygen.
It was really good to breathe in some fresh, clean air over in the east side.
Remember what I kept like telling you, that the ocean heals everything? Because like it's so hard to get that level of salinity in any type of like treatment that you get. But if you go into the water and you stay there, if you have like skin problems, like you have rashes, as long as it's not too severe, the ocean does a good job in fixing a lot of skin issues. Like if you have acne, a lot of acne, but you dunk your head in some.
Yeah, I experienced that actually when I was young. Yeah.
Well,
I went into the ocean and then I came out and I noticed that all my blackheads were gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it only worked one time. I don't know. Because I tried it again the next time, but it didn't do much. So I guess my skin got immunity from it.
I see. And then, I don't know, my hunch is that it could help eczema. You know, there's a lot of people who suffer from eczema.
Mm.
And man, that's that one is like,
it's really tough.
It's tough because it's so annoying, especially in the summer. But someone told me with eczema too, like sugar water actually helps. I don't know what I'm talking
really?
About. Yeah, no,
I'm gonna ask my friend who has pretty severe eczema.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was a podcast that I was listening to, but they tried everything in the books. I think it was their baby. And then they gave it a shower in water that had a lot of sugar in it, and it really did the trick. But I don't know. Maybe I'm spewing nonsense into the airwaves here.
Daniel, do you think you can live in one of those like surfing villages? Do you think you can live away from this city life? Minimum 6 months.
That's a good question.
Because I already miss it. I really miss that chill vibe.
Oh, what do you mean? You missed the city or you missed the surfer city?
Surfer city.
Like Yangyang?
Yeah, yeah.
What did you like most about the ambiance there that you missed? Or what do you miss about
it? I just really like that relaxed atmosphere and how there's like just the beach in walking distance.
Mm. What's the benefit of living in a city is that we have proximity to all these like things. Like if you want to go to a dentist, it's right here. If you want to go shopping, it's like 5 minutes away. If you want to go to the mall and get clothes, it's all about proximity if you live in a city, right?
Yeah.
But right now we're not taking advantage of any of those, yet we're still living. If we're just living, why not live right next to an ocean?
And then did you see at nighttime people like went into their pensions and started doing like grill BBQ?
Oh yeah.
That and then awesome. You started hearing all this music coming out and like the smoke.
Yeah. I used to live near Huntington Beach in California. And I would sometimes look at those beachfront hot properties and I would always be like, man, that would be a dream to like live next to the ocean. Just open up and you can go take a swim or a walk and come right back. But if you have it, maybe you get sick of it. I mean, humans are just so full of like, I mean, no matter what you have, you get used to it, you know, and...
Yeah, and I think of one issue already.
Is it the salt water coming in and staining all the?
Yeah, it's the humidity, furniture? So we need to bring our bosongi to there. You know, because things get
Katie,
really damp.
You should tell them about the bosongi. Like, describe the device you bought.
It's like it's a I don't know how
dehumidifier.
Yeah, it's a dehumidifier. And you turn it on and it sucks up all the water from that room.
The moisture out of it.
Yeah.
So generally people have it in their, their clothing room? A closet. Jeez, my English is going. Clothing room. Yeah, it soaks up all. And then that keeps your clothes fresh.
Yeah, a lot of houses have this like almost as a necessity because in the summertime we have that long rainy season.
Yeah, which we're in right now.
Yeah, and like it's a necessity.
And then white clothes, if you don't get it dry clean, they start getting a little stain around the neck collar.
Yeah.
And then that little stain turns into a yellow one.
Mm.
And then during winter, you finally are excited to put it on and then you notice it. Ooh, and it smells. It got that little stinky stank.
And do you see how much water comes out from that tool?
Yeah.
Like we have to throw out like the entire like water. Yeah. Every time we turn it on.
Yeah. And lately, a question that I've been thinking is, what is the meaning of life?
Oh, so deep.
It's a very general question. But the reason I started to think about this is there was a YouTube video that randomly popped up. There was like this Indian guy. He looked like Moses from the Bible. He had like huge beard. There's nobody who looks like this in the 20th century. I mean, where is this video coming from? So the thumbnail really grabbed my attention. And I clicked on it.
Yeah.
His name is, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing right, Sadhguru.
S-A-D-H-A-U-R-U?
No. Sadhguru. S-A-D-H-G-U-R-U. Apparently, he's like an Indian yogi. And which I don't know what the term yogi was, so I had to Wikipedia that. It's interesting. You know how like there's words where people would be like, yeah, that guy's a yoga. And you'll be like, oh, all right. But you're like, what? That's probably how would have been my response. Just, oh, okay, yeah. Oh, I didn't know he was a yogi. You're like, what is it? I'll be like, you know, yogi. Yogi is a person who like practices or is like a master at yoga.
Oh.
Yeah, Indian yoga, it, like the more the philosophical side.
Sounds similar to yoga.
I listened to his response, and he was trying to answer this question, and I thought it was brilliant. It really like struck on all fronts for me. So it's like a 10-minute clip, and to be honest, my explanation is not going to do it justice. So if you guys are interested in his response in its entirety, go search it.
Yeah.
But what I pulled out of it, I think the thing that I remember the most was his answer to what's the purpose of life was that it's to live life and to explore it and to live it totally. So what does that actually mean? I remember when my uncle asked me, we were driving together. I think we were also going to the East Coast.
Oh.
Sure, like, it might have been Yangyang. I don't know. But maybe somewhere else. You know, he was one of the uncles that never married. So he's single.
Yeah.
He's like in his 50s. And he asked me like this very broad question. He was like, Daniel, what do you think the meaning of life is?
Okay.
At that time, like I thought about it and I answered that I think the meaning of life is to work. I don't think he really understood it. And I don't think I really understood how to verbalize what I'm thinking. But basically that I think our kind of purpose here is to better ourselves and to improve ourselves.
Yeah.
And that only comes through work. So if you're static, you can't really develop yourself. If you're just static in life or static in thought, you never go from A to B. So there's no progression.
So the meaning of life you thought was to progress forward.
Yeah, not progress forward. Well, I guess so. To develop yourself, whether that's in thought, whether that's in physical, or to explore life. And so when I was watching this YouTube video,
yeah,
this kind of yogi, he detaches it from religion, which I loved. So there's a lot of people who are religious that put a lot of meaning in the fact that we're here to serve God.
Yeah.
That never really resonated with me. I think if someone was to create me and we were to say that God is like omniscient and like all knowing, why would he be so insecure that he needs the creation to revere him?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That just makes God seem so personal. And I don't think that there's a personal God. He's not out there like, oh, look at Daniel. He's saying that I don't exist. He's going to be in like this so-called hell. And like, that just seems like so yuchie, or what do you call it? Like elementary or like
childish.
Like, you know, there's a lot of that kind of thinking.
Yeah. But, you know, your dad is religious.
Yeah.
So if you said that to him, what do you think he would say back to you? I want to hear the other side of point of view.
We did have talks, and that's why we eventually I push him and I just refer to God as a mandu or a dumpling. And then don't you remember when my dad was here in Korea and I would talk to him till 3:30 in the morning?
Yeah.
It was all about going back and forth. And the funny thing is my dad is, he says he's spiritual, but he's not religious. He doesn't really care for labeling God as Christian, Catholic, Hindu, Muslim, whatever. But he just feels like a God does exist.
Yeah.
And the Bible is like a representation of what it is. But at the end of the day, when I talk to religion with my dad, as long as that brings him comfort,
mm-hmm.
and that brings him joy,
yeah.
in a set of beliefs, I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But for me, I don't believe, right? I was raised Catholic, but I don't believe in this like personal God and these like organized religion and their set of beliefs and this and that. I think it's very dull and actually unserving to my life.
Mm.
But when I listened to this yogi about like, hey, like, what do you think, you know, life is about? He was saying that like, you don't have to ascribe a particular meaning towards it. Life is life.
So just live.
To live, and your purpose is to live life fully, to explore everything that there is. Like the universe and the world is incredibly complex. There's so many things about life without the mental constructs that we put onto it. Job, your marriage,
yeah.
your work. That's all in your head, right? That's your thinking about what life is, right? But life as a third person, like nature.
So you know? Do what you want to do and experience as much.
Yeah, it's I think it's like explore life.
And don't put like your mental barriers to what you can do or what you can't. Is that what he means?
I guess this is why I'm not a yogi. Like when you throw like a question like that at me, and like in my mind, I'm trying to like continue my train of thought, but then also answer you and then try to connect the two together. And then my brain goes, CPU overload, CPU overload. Yeah, maybe I'll get off of this, but...
Yeah, but what did he say?
Why that thought triggered in my mind was just because when we're out in Yangyang, right? And when we're able to like go and explore life for what it is, like, you know, we went out there to go surfing. We're out there swimming in the water, experiencing a hobby or experiencing the water in its entirety and being present.
Yeah.
Right? And then sometimes we go like windsurfing out in Hangang and we're one with nature, right? Or sometimes I'm learning cooking. I'm learning. And it just, those moments just make me feel so alive. Lately, especially during COVID, I have so much more time to myself and just learning new things and immersing myself in it. And I just feel like that just brings so much meaning. That's just something that kept growing across my mind. I think the readers might get completely lost with what I'm saying. Partially, it's because I don't know what the hell I'm saying. I just know how I feel, and yeah, I'm trying to verbalize that feeling.
But I do agree. I think our life, yours and mine, yeah, become much more fuller, like over the past year or yeah, so.
Okay, Katie, I yeah, got it. I think I know how to verbalize it now.
Okay, show us.
It's because we're finally living life. Now, at this age, we finished our studies. You know, when we're younger, we're bound to the classroom for most of our waking day. And we've now wrestled back our schedules from corporate Korea. We're not bound to the cubicle for most of the working day. Yeah. So now the word living life has a new definition for us, right? It means learning or immersing ourselves in hobbies, activities, nature. You know, for us, it means surfing, leather making, rock climbing, cooking, recreational drawing. And, you know, I'm listing all these things, but, you know, it means that we're able to immerse ourselves with life as it is.
Yeah, I agree. But it's so ironic because you're supposed to do that in your, like, during your education years, right?
Mm.
Like all these like different aspects of life, like yoga or sports or, you know, different hobbies. Mm. But somehow I didn't get to do much of that in my childhood.
Yeah, modern day education it comes from the industrial age way of educating people. So you're learning tak 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 tak.
Yeah,
tak,
just
tak,
sitting
tak,
in
tak,
classrooms mm, and like, you know, a few sports selected by your school.
Mm.
So yeah.
So I mean, we could live 100 lives and it still wouldn't be enough time to explore all the things that life has to offer. Like for example, I want to learn how to make wine. I want to learn about X, Y, Z, A, B, C, D. I want to learn about architecture.
There's, you want to learn about cars?
Yeah, I want to learn how to drive an F1 car. Well, of course, there's a lot of steps before that. But my point is that we don't need to necessarily have this profound religious or celestial purpose to life. Life could have no profound meaning in and of itself. The act of living gives us enough purpose.
Mm.
It has enough meaning in and of itself.
Yeah.
And I guess all of this, the banter from left to right to tangents, I think that's what I'm trying to arrive at. Life doesn't need to have a purpose.
Yeah, I think this resonates with the way I'm living life the most.
Yeah, and I just share this because this is the way that we're feeling now. It might change as we, you know, as things change in our lives, but...
At this stage in our life,
it resonates so hard. It's like a bell, doom, 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 or like 808 beats. Doom, doom. All right, I'll stop. All right, and I think now it's a good time. We forgot to take emails, our listeners' emails last time, and
yeah,
someone called us out on that. So today we'll do two.
Oh, we got two.
Yeah. Well, actually, we have a few in the pipeline.
We doubled up.
Yeah. If you want to contact us with anything, you know, if you want a second opinion from your neighbors here in Korea, our email is futureneighbor, that's neighbor neighbor at gmail. Just shoot us whatever message you have. First email is titled Life Goals. Oh, interesting. He reads our mind too. I think he does. He work at Google?
He's eavesdropping us.
Yeah. All right. Email goes like this. Hey, Daniel and Katie. Currently, I'm facing a life dilemma. I just finished my third year of undergrad as an accounting student at a relatively good school. I'm currently doing an internship at an accounting firm, and while the money is nice, I'm bored out of my mind. The past 3 weeks have made me realize that I really don't want to work 9 to 5 in an office for the rest of my life. My gosh, doesn't this just tie in perfectly from what we're just talking about?
Yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking. I can either continue my accounting career by finding a full-time job after I graduate, and because my school has a good accounting program, it would be relatively easy for me to do. I know I have a good income and job security, but I don't think I'll be happy with my life. Or I can pivot and do something that makes me happy. I love food and cooking and traveling, and if I could incorporate my life or business into these areas, that would be fantastic. However, this option is much more risky. I'm still young, yada, yada, yada. What would you do if you were in my position? Kitty, you want to run? You want to surf with this one?
But then your story sounds so similar to mine. I was also an accounting student, but I was pursuing accounting career at one point, but I never did because kind of steered into banking. So a little bit different, but overall very similar. But you're so good because you know that you have all these alternative things that you want to do. Because for me, I didn't know anything outside what I was studying. So I didn't get to see all the other things outside my box. So I just kept on with my career.
You mean like passion career. Areas? You didn't know even what areas you were interested in?
I thought that was like the only way for me to leave, like doing, you know, banking and going into this office. And then only like 5 years later into my career, I kind of steered towards a different area and kind of started living a totally different life. But for you, you already know all the other things that you would like to pursue if you didn't do accounting.
But Katie, I think he's asking, if you were in his shoes, would you pivot out of what you're majoring in now without finishing and pursuing a passion, or what would you do?
I mean, for me, I would kind of give it a few more years because you've already invested so much time and as you said, it's good money and like reality hits. So you need some capital to like, you know, move on with your life or do things that you truly love.
Yeah.
So spend a few years to invest and, you know, just financially prepare for your, you know, other things that you want
to
do.
Yeah, I have to agree with Katie. When you're a student, you feel like antsy, like you have to get this path that you love and you're passionate for. But remember, you have like 30 or 40 years ahead of you. And so if it only takes 1 year of more hardship to get your accounting degree, like invest and get the accounting degree because that's a great backup. You may think you like traveling and cooking, but do it every day and you're like, damn it, I can't stand cooking.
Yeah.
And then what? Grind through one more year, put that in the back of your pocket.
Yeah.
And then if you decide to become a world traveler or a world chef, even greater for you. And one other practical thing, like if you pick up a job in traveling and in foods, there's no entry to barrier. So competition in that area is cutthroat. Let me tell you, even trying to make it on YouTube, that was even very tough as well, trying to get that channel and things like that. And it gets harder and harder as more people come into travel and food because, again, there's no barriers to entry. If you have an accounting degree, which you need to get certified for, you need to get a CPA, that shrinks the pool. So if you get your CPA and you put in 4 or 5 years at a firm, then you also get capital. Without capital, it's very hard to make it and break into the travel or food industry and make it big because you're going to be incomeless for a long time. And most people give up within the first year being like, this is hopeless because it's content business or it's a grind. If you spend 5 years and built up a little 1 year, 2 year budget, then you'll be able to focus that much more on food and travel.
Good luck.
Good luck. Very, very good luck. Then email number 2. Katie, do you want to try reading this email?
No, you do it. you're better.
All right. This one comes from Washington, D.C. Hi, Daniel and Katie. I love your content. I'm from the U.S., but I live in a predominantly Korean neighborhood outside of Washington, D.C. Thanks to your series, I've been exploring Korean culture and stories with much more confidence. I even hosted my own Korean barbecue inspired by your video.
Wow.
Okay, this is a pretty long email, so let me get to the gist. Can you share more on the Korean perspective of the U.S.? Or maybe discuss how a person from the U.S. could transition to living in Korea post-COVID-19. Does Korea have a Black, Latino, or non-white community? So it seems like she's an African-American who is interested in potentially moving to Korea. And from what she said in the email, it seems like a lot of this recent kind of injustice with the George Floyd is kind of making her question whether she wants to live in the U.S. or explore living outside of the U.S. I guess we could start with the first one. What is the Korean perspective of the U.S.?
Yeah, I think you can split this like both politically or non-politically.
That's right.
I'll say the non-political part.
Sure.
Well, very positive, like, and we are very welcoming to foreigners. U.S. being our very long-time ally of Korea, people are very receptive, and especially if you speak English, people want to talk to you and try practice speaking English with you.
Yeah.
Because in Korea, there's like a huge desire to speak English. So yeah, you're going to feel pretty welcomed and yeah, comfortable and very safe.
Yeah, safe is that's a good one, because in Korea, like you can be out at like 3 a.m. and you never really question your safety. Just to give an example, you can put your cell phone or your laptop out on your desk at a cafe.
Yeah.
And then you can go use the restroom, or you can go even eat outside. And when you come back, no one's touched it.
Yeah.
That's because Koreans have this strong 눈치. Everyone is really self-aware of their surroundings. And so like they do not do any like criminal behavior easily. Everyone's watching each other. So they're very vigilant for each other. And especially if you're a foreigner, they want to really make sure that you get a good impression of Korea. So a lot of locals want to treat you very well.
Yeah, and people won't really like see you differently by the color of your skin, but more by your country. So people ask you, where are you from?
Yeah.
And if you say America, oh, she's American, and that's it. Yeah. They don't go anything further than that.
That's right. It's interesting. This was similar to me when I was living in Japan, and I think it applies to Korea as well. You're seen as a foreigner, as like Katie was saying. You're not seen as a Black person, or you're not seen as a Mexican person, or you're not seen as whatever ethnicity you are.
Yeah.
You're basically labeled a local or a foreigner.
Mm.
So we have a word for foreigner. It's called 외국인.
And you will be grouped into that part, 외국인.
Yeah. So I think the tough part is then, like, naturally, you'll never be seen as a local person just because you look different.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it doesn't carry any of the stereotypes or stigma that's so profound in the U.S.
Mm.
Right? Like, Asian people are like this, or Black people are like this, or Mexicans are like this, Indians are like that.
There's no knowledge of that stereotype.
There's no ethnic specific stereotypes for most.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people who traveled abroad, of course, or studied abroad that know that, but
yeah, that's like very few people, right?
Yeah. So then what's the general stereotypes of foreigners? Maybe they may be loud. Right. Yeah, that's the one. Like, most foreigners, when they come to Korea, they don't have an inside voice. So at cafes, when everyone's talking, like, kind of
we tend to be very quiet, right? Like Korean people.
And then everybody's like, hi, how are you? Oh my God. Like, I was like at this Korean restaurant and they shouldn't even understand.
Yeah, like in subways too. Yeah, that's the attention grabber.
Yeah, like all these tables are like, okay, well, we now know your whole life because we've been hearing about it for the last hour. I mean, so that's kind of the perception that maybe foreigners are loud, but... So yeah, so there's that. I think I also talked with one of my friends who is Black, who's living in, actually in Singapore. And he said actually that was very refreshing. You know, we're just...
He's Black? Isn't he Indian?
No, another friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he was just saying that a very similar thing, that in Asia, you don't get that, like, that feeling of racism. It's a feeling of, like, a foreigner.
feeling if you a catch little the difference. Bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Left out in some circumstances.
Yeah, I like guess. You'll never be a local, but then you're not, you don't feel racism. It's just,
yeah.
It's you're different. Grouped in with everyone that's not Korean or not Japanese or not Singaporean. Yeah.
And that's nothing to be with fair or not fair, right?
Yeah, it's just a fact. The color of your skin or anything like that.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant fair as in the type of the color of your skin.
Oh, no, I meant like you can't complain about not being a local.
Yeah, because that's just fact.
Yeah.
Oh, and I forgot to answer. The Korean perspective of the U.S. on the political side, it's bad, right? Because now, like it's because, of course, of Trump, Korea. I think the international standing of U.S. becoming like a moral authoritative, like a leader in the international scene, I think that's gone down the drain. So,
but it can come and go because if Trump doesn't get reelected, then it can get recovered, I think, quite quickly.
Yeah. But most of Korea is like hand in hand with the U.S., because, you know, we've had a close relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
We saved us out of Korean War.
And we have the U.S. Army base in Korea as well. So
that actually ties in. So there's a place called Itaewon in Seoul. The old U.S. Army base used to be there. They moved out, I think, 2 years ago. Actually, there's a lot of more black people there than there are Latinos in Korea.
Yeah, you see more black people
than you see Latinos. So I wouldn't say that, like, there's a tons, but there are areas where people come and live. I think most of the foreigners that come to Korea are here to teach English.
Yeah.
Some of them are here to play professional sports. It was like that in Japan, too. When I was living and I'd ride the subway and there'd be a guy who'd be almost like 7 feet tall. And I was like, for sure, you know, he's playing basketball. I would ask him. He's like, yeah, I'm here playing baseball. At my age, I couldn't continue on to MLB. So I came here abroad and I'm still pursuing the love of my life.
And they're really popular, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So growing up, I've never seen like a black person come on Korean TV shows or like news or like, you know, just any kind of like blogs. Mm. But recently we started seeing some of that too. Like there's a really famous Korean guy who is like has a Nigerian father, half Korean, half Nigerian.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And then it's so he's so like popular. A very famous model. He's really young.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because he looks African American.
Yeah.
But he can't speak English. He's like 100% Korean because he was raised, I'm not sure if he was born, but he was raised here and like he went to all the schools here.
Yeah, he basically grew up Korean.
He couldn't be more Korean than me.
But it's crazy because he can't speak English.
Yeah, and he was sharing an episode about like feeling so embarrassed at like an international photo shoot or something. How like all the photographers, everybody assumed that he could speak English and they started speaking English to him. But all he could say was, or like, tell the truth that he can't speak English.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's even more and more.
By the way, his name is Han Hyun-bin, if you want to look him up.
Yeah, doesn't he do the commercials for Hyundai?
Oh.
And the driving and stuff like that?
He's on a lot of commercials, yeah.
Yeah. Even when I was on YouTube, I saw this one. I think he was a black student. I think he was from Africa as well. But he filmed himself and he's in Korean school. He's like a high schooler.
Yeah.
But he eats all the local like gamjatang and he's so good at it. And his Korean is so good. And it was like, and he's huge. He's like really popular.
Is he on YouTube?
Yeah, I forgot the name of his channel. I would totally share it, but I forgot. Maybe I'll put it on the YouTube link.
But we started to see more and more of that. Like there's this other guy who's not Korean at all. Yeah. I think he's not Korean, but he learned Korean. He speaks really good Korean. He comes on all the Korean variety shows.
That's right.
And he's like black.
I think it's because there's a lot of people who actually decided to raise their kids in Korea. Those kids are learning Korean and now through social media or YouTube, they're kind of sharing their experiences and it's so interesting. And so now they're getting a lot of appeal. And I think that trend is going to get bigger and bigger. And one last thing that you should consider, air pollution problem, especially during the winter. There's a lot of positive stuff and I'm sure you've researched that and there's just tons of stuff you can learn and just enjoy out here. Very safe, good education and pretty relatively low cost of living if you can get a job out here.
Yeah, but I think this is something that's not very much talked about because, yeah. you know, it's definitely not a good news for tourists or yeah. Korean travel.
Yeah. I mean, if you're here as a tourist, you don't even see it because you're here for a week.
Yeah.
Even if it's like very trivial. Micro dust in the air, you don't really even feel it. But if you live here long term, you'll feel that.
Yeah, if it becomes your everyday, yeah, something to consider.
All right, guys. I think that's it for today. Whether, you know, we're going to upload this into YouTube, and if you have your definition of what purpose in life is, or maybe it has no purpose, as we're saying,
no please feel free to share. No purpose is no problem, too.
Yeah, that was the whole point of our episode. We're just living for the sake of living.
I love that.
Amen. Thanks, guys. We'll be back next week.
Okay.
And keep it funky.
Thank you.